everyone. What is up? My name's Tony McGeehee, and you're listening to Emerging Entrepreneurs, the podcast made by an entrepreneur for entrepreneurs. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's get started. Welcome back to episode 2. If this is your first time tuning in, welcome home. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for joining me. We've got a great guest for you today. I know you're going to love it. 28-year-old Daniel Botero is an entrepreneur through and through. Daniel was born in Colombia and moved to the United States when he was only 8 years old, with his mother and 2 suitcases in hopes of finding the American dream. Daniel's entrepreneurial spirit flourished at a young age when he began selling shirts and shoes to his classmates from his school locker. Daniel currently is developing his personal brand and business, where he helps college students find and land their dream job. Daniel is one of my personal mentors and has personally helped me in finding and following my passion. This interview is filled with so much knowledge about Daniel's mindset and how he's gotten to where he is today. I know you're going to love it. Please go follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Emerging Entrepreneurs Podcast. Also, please leave a review on iTunes and share the podcast with your friends. I can't wait to pass Daniel's knowledge along to you guys, so let's jump right in.
It's on.
It's on? All right. Welcome back to episode 2, everyone. I'm here with Daniel Botero. Daniel, thanks for being on the show. Really great to be in your beautiful home with all these books. Hopefully I'll have a bookcase like this one day. So just to get started, go ahead and tell the audience just a little bit about yourself, you know, where you grew up, everything like that. So go ahead.
All right. So what's going on, guys? I'm Daniel Botero. So I was born in Medellin, Colombia. I moved to the United States when I was 8 years old with me and my mom. We actually came to this country with 2 suitcases and $2,000. Just really in search of the American dream. I came to, when I was in the United States, my mom was always working just because she just had to make sure that she paid the bills and we had food. And since then, I always knew I had to make my own money. And that's really kind of a reason why I always thought of ways to even think about how I can make money. So when I was like 9-10 years old is when my first I would say solution that allowed me to make money came to fruition. I definitely messing up that word.
Fruition.
Fruition. just came to life. And I lived in a neighborhood where there was a big soccer, like grass area behind my house. There was a YMCA. And there was adults who would come and they would come and play soccer after work. And I noticed that they always came rushing with their work clothes. They were changing and they never brought anything to drink. And about less than a half a mile away, there was a Albertsons. And so I would go to Albertsons with this little cooler with wheels and I would fill it up with Gatorades and water and I would just watch them play because I love soccer. So I would watch them play, have a cooler, and then I started selling water to them. And I was probably making like $20 a week, and then towards like 2 years later, I was like making more like $50, $70 a week. And I was like 10, 11 years old, so I felt like I was on top of the world. And that was really that I was like, I really enjoy business and I really enjoy finding opportunities and trying to solve them. On top of that, I was really influenced with the stories of my dad. My dad passed away when I was 3 years old. And he was managed our family business. And after my dad passed away, 5 years later, that company went bankrupt. And all the great stories of hearing how his great business success and his ability to be able to grow the family company and able to take care of us financially was such an inspiration to me. So that really solidified the fact that I wanted to do business and go into entrepreneurship. And that's really how I got all started. It started with, you know, the stories of my dad, seeing the early success of selling water to adults. Then I graduated into car wash, where I had a car wash business with a friend of mine in the neighborhood, where we would have like, we would charge like $20 a month and we would wash their cars every other week. We had like, at the top of the business, we had like 8 to 10 cars. So it was good money for being 12, 13 years old. In high school, I upgraded the business and I was selling Lacoste polos from my locker room. And that was awesome because that was making like $20 to $30 a shirt. I was getting the shirts, all the Lacoste polos, the majority of the Lacoste polos were made in Peru, and my mom's best friend was from Peru, and she would bring me the Lacoste polos, and I would then sell them for like $35. At the store, you would buy them for $100, and I had pretty much every color you can think of, any size, in my locker room, and that was really great until I started getting the wrong attention. Then I started selling Air Force Ones, and I got robbed. And that was not good because I was, if you were seeing me in high school, I'm still short, but in high school I was a midget. And so I got robbed by this big muscular group of guys, and I was really scared. And then I was like, you know what, I'm not doing this anymore. Not even selling Lacoste polos. And that was my end of my entrepreneurship career in high school.
You let him beat you down.
Oh, man. I pretty much ran away. He stole my shoes. I ran the other way. I was scared. I was like, every time I saw him in high school, he would be wearing the Air Force Ones, and he would just stare me down, and I was just like a little punk. And I just walked the other way, and it was like that. I felt like there was nothing I could do. It's not like it was a legal business. If the high school knew if I was even selling shoes, I would probably get in a lot of trouble. So for me, at that point, it wasn't even worth it. And I think at that point, I lost money in that business because I had to pay for the shoes ahead of time. And so when he stole two pairs of shoes, I was like, there goes my profit. And I just gave up on that business for sure.
All right.
Yeah.
So after getting your shoes stolen from you, gave up on entrepreneurship for a while. When did you get back into it, and what made you get back into it?
I've always had that like entrepreneurship mindset. So even in high school, I was part of the business academy. I just loved business. At that time, I remember that we would watch The Apprentice in class. Like, I think it was every Friday because it aired on Thursday. So on Friday, she would record it and we would watch it. So I love business, and I always knew I wanted to do business. So I stopped having business at that time. I was working at Universal Studios as like a vendor. I would sell glow-in-the-dark swords and bounce balls at Universal. So I actually ended up working at Universal for over 5 years. I was still in business. I loved sales. I didn't have my business of my own. I was working. I was always trying to make money. If sometimes it wasn't my idea. When I was 14 and I couldn't work, I did landscaping in the summer. Like, I worked at a guy that played soccer that I sold him water for multiple years, had a landscaping business, and I said, give me a job. And I was working. I worked as a lifeguard at One on Wild. So I always held jobs because I always needed money because I didn't feel right asking my mom for money to buy my own stuff. Like, yeah, she would buy like the essentials of food. I'm not gonna say that I was paying rent when I was in high school, but anything that I wanted, I needed to buy, like, mm-hmm. you know, myself. Okay. So I was always working.
Okay, gotcha. So then after high school, obviously I know that you went to UCF. What'd you major in, and kind of what led you down that path, and you know, what led you down the path of what you did decide to do after college?
So I actually was not I wasn't the best student. I also wasn't the worst student in high school. So I knew I wasn't going to get into any university. I also didn't really know what the university system was like or how it worked. My mom had no idea. She came from Colombia. She didn't go to school in Colombia because she married my dad very young. So my dad was be a stay-at-home wife. Like, he was successful. So she didn't understand the educational system or the higher, like, college or universities in the United States. So I ended up going to Valencia Community College for the first 2 years, and I got my AA. I did all my electives to be able to get into the College of Business at UCF, and I just used Direct Connect. I had Bright Futures. It was a partial Bright Futures at that time, not the full one. Mm-hmm. And also, for the longest time, I didn't have my papers, so like I couldn't even apply. I didn't even know if I was going to go to college. But I knew that I want to go to business.
Yeah.
But I did always knew business, so I went to Valencia. Then I went to use Direct Connect to get into UCF. And at UCF, had no doubt that business was the major that I wanted to do. I just didn't know what part of business, whether it was management, marketing, finance, or accounting. I never thought about accounting. I just never knew. I always knew I wasn't smart enough for accounting. So it really came down to management and marketing. And I couldn't decide, and I always knew that I wanted to own my own business. And I always knew, I got into a lot of personal development. That's really when I started reading books and started listening to audiobooks and reading and understanding the power of mentors and having mentors and getting mentors. And so the more I research, is like, okay, if I want to own my own business and I want to be a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, what is the path that these people did to get there? And I realized that there was really two common paths, and one of them was, the most common one was sales, and the second most common one was management. So you would go and you would go district manager, regional manager, area, whatever it is, and then you become vice president, then president, then CEO. And so at that point, I would rely to my professors, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to be the coolest kid. I'm going to double major in management and marketing. Later, I would not suggest you double major. I would just suggest you do one major and then do a master's. But then I did that, and then I was really wanted to do the professional selling program. So I think that's really why I ended up sticking with marketing, because I didn't want to give up. At that time, the professional selling program at UCF, you had to be a marketing major.
So then, you know, after graduation, I know now what you're focused on is helping college students land their dream job. So where did that idea come from? You know, was it something you always knew you were going to do, or was it just something that you kind of came up with on a whim, kind of, and then started to develop it?
No, I definitely didn't ever think about long-term creating a business on helping students like land their dream job, or even doing public speaking or personal development. Actually, even through college, my management focus was entrepreneurship. So my official degree would be management with a track of an entrepreneurship, and marketing with a track of professional sales. And there was a couple of ideas that I would always go to the entrepreneurship center and talk to the coaches that didn't come true. Like, I always, like, ideally, I was like, I am going to, after graduation, work on my business. So there was a business plan competition at UCF called the Joust, and we made it all the way to the semifinals, and that idea was called U-Bike. And it was an automatic bicycle rental system around college campuses. So the way it would work is like Redbox, but with bicycles. And what we're trying to do is actually get students, SGA, to pay for this, so it would be a free service for students, so that there would be different bicycle systems all around the campus, and then students use their student card to be able to travel. And at that time, that was nowhere in the United States. This is about 8-9 years ago. It wasn't. And everybody like that we talked to loved the idea. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it was genius. And we didn't have the expertise to execute it, or the capital to buy or hire the expertise. Yeah. And so at that point, the idea was ahead of our time. And it was awesome to see later, years later, that downtown Orlando now has those bikes around, or every major city that you go to has those bikes around. And I guarantee that UCF will end up having something similar. I think they already do.
Yeah, they do. When you started talking about that, I was like, wait, did Daniel create this? So yeah, the SGA has bikes that you can now rent. They have bikes that you can rent around campus. And so when I lived in the dorms my freshman year, right outside the dorms, they had bikes that, as long as you had your student ID, you could rent them out. So yeah,
I had the business plan. I was looking to see the business plan, but yeah, at that time we went to Joust. We had talked to SGA at UCF, and we even had talked to SGA at UF. And actually the guy that was running for president for SGA at UF, he actually ended up putting it as part of his campaign promises, like, this is what I want to do. And at UF, the parking situation is even harder.
Yeah.
So people there have go-ped scooters. And so that was a bigger, it was going to solve a problem more at UF.
Yeah, for sure.
That guy was going to get it. He ended up getting, becoming president, and we ended up, at that point, me and my business partner ended up not doing it. And I remember, like, if it was yesterday, we were at the joust, we were about to go and present this, the competition, and I get a call from Frito-Lay, and they, this is February, and they say, hey, Daniel, we want to extend you an offer. And I looked at my business partner, and it was a really great job offer, making more money than I had already thought I was going to be able to make right out of college. Mm-hmm. And I told my business partner, is if we win, we follow this business full plan. Like, because if we won, we had $20,000, we had the university's backing, we were part of the incubator program, so we were able to launch it. But if we don't win, I'm going to take this job offer. And we didn't win. And, like, other judges gave us really good feedback, and one of the judges was actually, like, the vice president for Wells Fargo, and she even talked to us about, like, going and talking to her about funding. And but a lot of the feedback that we got from the judges was that this is a – it's going to be very hard to execute it. Like, if you have no capital and you also don't have the expertise, all you've done is kind of put the pieces together – the likelihood of you actually making this business come to reality are going to be very slim to none. And
yeah. And
I think that was the first realization of everybody has great ideas, but it's not the idea, it's the execution. And I learned that the hard way. Like, if I could have executed that bicycle idea, yeah, I mean...
Who knows?
I don't know. I actually listened to an article in The Economist that came out last week that there is a company... that became the fastest unit, it became a unicorn, like a $1 billion valuation in less than 12 months. And it's actually a bicycle rental system in San Francisco.
Wow. Well, especially San Francisco.
San Francisco.
I bet.
And I think they do bicycles and those scooters, electrical scooters.
Yeah.
And I was like, the idea was ahead of its time, and I also didn't have the knowledge or the expertise. And.
Yeah.
A second idea I had in college was it was called Night Exchange. This wasn't my idea. It was actually a friend of mine that came and she pitched it to me, and so I started working with her. And it was supposed to be a website for students to be able to trade books within college students. So very similar to Craigslist, but it was going to be a mix of like Craigslist with social media aspect, where only if you're a UCF student could you trade within students, so it'll make it safe, and it would have designated spots where you can meet to try it. Because at that time, Craigslist was starting, but there was all those horror stories of Craigslist and things like that. But this would allow it where it'd be more organized, like, hey, this is the class. If you're taking accounting 101, then here's everybody who took the class and is selling the textbook and everything like that. And again, great idea, poor execution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. So what have you learned from mentors or influencers about entrepreneurship? Like, what are the top, like, 5, 6, 7 things that you've learned from influencers or mentors that you have that you kind of think about every day or on a consistent basis as you, you know, go along your entrepreneurial, like, journey?
I think one is, I think Gary Vee says it the most, is that everybody has great ideas and it's the execution. And at first, you would think like that, no, like the idea is so important. And it's not like multiple ideas. Like, even growing up, when I went back and visited my family in South America, in Colombia, the pharmacies deliver. Like, everybody delivers. There's a guy in a motorcycle that delivers. And I never understood why restaurants wouldn't deliver in America. Like, only pizza and Chinese.
Yeah.
And I always thought, like, whoa, why didn't I just go and tell restaurants that I'll deliver their food? And the idea, and then 5 years later, everybody's doing it, and it's poor execution. So, like, and I'm sure that every person listening to this, especially if you are an aspiring entrepreneur, you have the idea, and the problem is not the idea. Like, that's the easiest thing. It's the execution. And So that really comes down to like the second thing that I've learned is the best way to reach any goal is to learn from someone who's done it before. And that goes to mentoring. So like that's why you get mentors, is to find the mentors who've done a goal that you're trying to achieve and learn from them. And if you don't have those people accessible to you, there's so many tools out there like LinkedIn or even Facebook, or I mean LinkedIn, if you're a student, is a goldmine. Like as a student, you should be able to reach out to anybody on LinkedIn and get a reply. Like if you message 10 people who've done a goal that you want to do, at least 3 of them will reply. At least. So that's huge. And then the second thing is books, or nowadays YouTube. So many people are out there, great content, and are videotaping and recording everything they did, how to get to that point, that is there for you. And there's just no excuse. That it really comes down to you putting the effort to learn to be able to then execute that idea. Like someone's done it. Like no one invents anything. Like somebody mentioned to me, like would he have been Albert Einstein if he was born 20 years earlier?
Yeah, I mean, probably not.
Probably not, because it was because of the inventions of the scientists before him that laid the foundation for him to be successful. And so we don't know. Maybe.
Like the book Outliers. You read that one?
Yep.
Yeah, that, I mean, all about timing.
Yep.
The hockey players.
The hockey players that were born in the beginning of the year. Yeah, I have that book here somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Anything else you want to add on that?
And then so the younger you are, like the more time you have, and just use the resources that they're out there. I mean, especially free. I think you can get anything you need for free. Like even do you think about with the best universities in the world, like MIT and Harvard, you can get and watch those courses for free. And I'm pretty sure you can learn all the material that somebody is paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to go to those courses. The only difference is that you can consume it all, learn it all, even know more than some of the students there. The only difference is that you would not get the diploma. And that diploma will open a lot of doors, but that's, you still gain the knowledge. And I think sometimes when you're paying for programs or you're paying for courses, what you're paying is for somebody to have taking the time to organize that content that's already out there for free, and it's just saving you time and money, or saving you time. And I think that's another thing that you're gonna get to a point where, as a student, you have a lot of time, no money. And then once you start working and you get busy, you start making money, and then now you have no time. Mm-hmm. So it switches. And so it's finding how that balance. So if you are a broke student, you're not at a disadvantage. You have time.
Yeah.
And if you are you graduate and you have a great job, well, now you're going to have to pay to buy time, right? So I don't have time to do all this research on how to be the best photographers or how to get in shape. So I pay for a personal trainer, or I pay for a web designer. Mm-hmm. As a student, you don't have the luxury to pay for that. You gotta learn how to do it.
You just learn, yep, for sure. And then with your business on helping college students find their dream job, you know, whether it be like a mission statement or what you want it to be in the future, you know, what is that? And then also down the road, say in the next 5 or 10 years, where do you want to be at personally, whether it be with that business or just overall in general?
So that business, and I think you asked me about it earlier, and I didn't really go into a lot of detail about it, but the business where I'm doing now, like I've gone through it, I'm very, very passionate, and I found this, I started out just going to college campuses and speaking just to a way of giving back, because I was so grateful that someone who had no idea what college is or how college can be so impactful, and to be able to graduate within 4 years, which the average of people are taking 6 years to graduate from a 4-year degree, and be able to have a job, which when I had a job, I thought it was, you graduate and you have a job. And I was looking around, and most of my friends didn't have a job lined up. And if they did, it wasn't a job that it was, you didn't even need a degree, or they were being underpaid. So I realized that I had done a lot of things right, and I had associated with the right professors, with the right mentors. So I saw that there was a need, and this hobby of mine of helping and mentoring students has been evolving to becoming a business. And really, reason why I wanted to become a business is so that I could free up more time to be able to do this at a bigger and grander scale, because I see the opportunity of students. Like, here's some statistics. The average four-year college degree is about $40,000, and that's an in-state, that's an in-state university. Mm-hmm. But students are now taking 6 years to graduate, so that's another $20,000. So students are graduating with $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. I think the average student debt per student is $20,000 or more, and then they're taking 6 years to graduate. But the statistics, studies show that 85% of students are graduating without a job lined up, right? So that's crazy. And so when I was seeing all my friends going through that, I was like, I want to do something about it. And so that's where I started, like, kind of like making time to be able to focus on this more, to be able to create more content about this topic, bring more awareness, help students understand what they need to do while they're in college to be able to then graduate with their dream job.
Okay. Gotcha. So, one last question. You probably heard this one if you listen to School Greatness podcast. So, last question that Lewis always asks his guests, I want to ask my guests as well. So, the three truths. So, you know, if it's 60, 70 years from now, you've done everything you wanted to, you grew the business of helping college students land their dream job to everything you ever wanted to be. You know, it's like this multi-billion-dollar business. You've helped billions of college students land their dream jobs. You've done everything you've ever wanted, but for some reason, at the end of your life, everything is erased. And the only thing that everybody has to remember you by is the three truths that you write down on this piece of paper next to your bed. So what are your three truths? What do you write down?
Man, you know, I listened to that podcast and I never thought about what my answers would be. I think that you're the captain of, like, of your life, and especially if you are blessed to live in the United States or in a country where you're free to be able to make to create the life that you want. So I think that that would be one. The second one is, I think definitely the fact that I would want somebody to read it, to live life, to do things for people without any expectations of doing anything back in return. And I read a book that's called, like, Givers and Takers, and it was really impactful to know that, like, the majority of people are either matchers or takers. But to just give unconditionally, and I've seen it, like, that it does come back to you. So, like, and so I would just say do that, because you build really great relationships that way, and it just ends up really always coming to help you in the end. And then the third thing is do what makes you happy. Follow your passion. If you're not happy, find a way to follow your passion. And sometimes you can get distracted or pull different directions or get comfortable with being in a corporate job, but in the end, you need to follow your passion and have no regrets. Because, like, if you spend all your time working and doing something you don't enjoy, that you're gonna regret it. So just follow it. Try to create that. Like, as soon as you can, make that time and make your passion a priority, the better off you're gonna be.
All right, perfect. Daniel, thank you again. Great episode. So yeah, thank you again so much. Really appreciate it. And we'll see you next time, guys.
Thank you.
What another great interview. I don't know about you guys, but I'm loving this already. I cannot wait for the future and the great guests we're going to have on the show. Leave a comment below with your favorite bit or quote from the episode. Make sure to share this with your friends. Again, follow us on Facebook and Instagram @Emerging Entrepreneurs Podcast. Thanks for tuning in, guys, and I'll see you on the next episode.